This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
NCAA protocols, Wes. Hey, there's nothing like a long laundry list of things from the NCAA to be sure you check all the boxes, but you're going to have to check all the boxes as we move into March Madness, whenever that might be.
All right, Mark, let's get to some of these details, because I'm just not sure how feasible this is going to be. And it also brings into question the traditional conference championships finish Saturday and Sunday and NCAA tournament starts Tuesday type thing, doesn't it? Because here's the number one guideline the NCAA has set out, and really everything else is going to be behind this, I think. And that is, the NCAA is asking that teams show up, that all Tier 1, players, coaches, staff, medical personnel, administrator, whatever, every Tier 1 participant show up with 7 straight negative tests. 7 straight. Tell me how that works, Pac.
I hope it's going to work, but I think they're making it difficult to jump through hoops so we can have hoops. I'm hoping that we can pull this off. I'm rooting for it. It feels like to me this is kind of like when the Big Ten made their decision to opt out of college football, and they went, oh, it's okay to jump in the water. Okay, cool. We're back, but here are our list of assignments for everybody. And when you saw that list of, you know, the 21-day holdout, and you're like, well, how's that going to work? You know you're going to get positive tests. So if somebody tests positive, they're out at least 3 weeks. How is that going to work in a condensed season?
Right.
I feel the same way when I read these protocols from the NCAA. There's no doubt safety is priority one. I get it. You don't have to preach to any of us on that front. But if you're going to make it to the point that you've got to pass 7 in a row, I don't know how this is going to work. I mean, all you got to do is take a snapshot of the regular seasons right now in college basketball across the board. There doesn't seem to be a day that goes by that the game isn't postponed or canceled. And I don't care what part of the country you're in. Doesn't matter.
Mark.
Doesn't matter.
We've had 2 teams that haven't had a game canceled or postponed. Okay? Now, North Carolina was supposed to play Syracuse last weekend. They plugged Notre Dame in to play instead of Syracuse. So I could call the North Carolina-Syracuse a postponement, but what I'm saying is Carolina and Miami are the only 2 schools in the ACC that haven't had an interruption in their schedule, okay? That's the way we got to look at it in this respect. And now the NCAA wants to bring 68 teams to Indianapolis, and they want them to arrive with 7 consecutive tests. Here's my question. Number one question is, who's paying for the 7 tests before the team arrives in Indianapolis? Is the NCAA paying for that? Because most teams aren't going to test 7 times between the end of their conference tournament and the beginning of the NCAA tournament unless the NCAA is paying for it. And as you always like to say, show me who's paying for it and I'll show you a reason to do it, right?
Well, here's the other question I've got. Let's just say we can get to that point of the year and there are 68 teams and we are going to the state of Indiana.
There's the next point.
Here to me is the bigger issue. Okay, let's say everybody's done a great job. We've stayed relatively healthy. We have a list of 68 that the committee has said, hey, these are the teams that are worthy to advance to the tournament. And West Durham U is taking on Mark Packer U, a 1-16. And all of a sudden, Mark Packer, you, one of those 7, we got a positive. What do we do now?
Right.
Now, what happened? How long am I sitting out? Am I eliminated from the tournament? Are there forfeitures? How does your tournament move forward with 68, everybody basically under the same roof in the state of Indiana? And we've done all the right things. We've done an incredible job to get to that point. What is the backup for all of a sudden, oops, I got a positive? What do we do?
Correct. Right. And then Oh, by the way, let me add this too. As the NCAA told us, not only about forfeitures from a positive test, they have said they're going to do daily PCR testing once the event begins. Well, and in their mind, when does the event begin? Because if the event begins starting with the 7 tests, then I understand. That means 7 daily PCR tests that the NCAA will administrate. But here's the other part about this. Where's the runway on this? Do we think we're going to – look, in football, we had a regular season that was set to end, what, the week after Thanksgiving or December 2nd, right? We ended up having games on December 9th. We ended up having a regular season game that wasn't played, by the way, on December the 16th, which was the day of the ACC championship game. So where now are we fall – or 19th, I'm sorry, December 19th, which was the day of the ACC championship game. Where do we fall from the end of the ACC tournament to the start of the NCAA tournament? And when that gap occurs, is that when the 7 tests are going to occur? Or is there some degree of an expectation that the testing is going to start while the ACC tournament's going on? Because if that's the case, then you can forget anything beyond just minimal attendance at the ACC tournament, because then you're not going to risk the, you know, factors that would lead to a positive test. And we all know what those are, right? Being around one another. And the other thing that bothers me about this is the NCAA wants a bubble. It's the easiest way to do it. The NBA proved it's the easiest way to do it. But at the end, they don't want to say it. Just say the only way to do this event is to put the 68 teams in a bubble pack. Just say it. It's okay. Nobody gets hurt. You're only telling us the truth. And somebody says, well, it's not about the money. It's about the money now. It's absolutely about the money.
It's always about the money. I have to say this. You want the answer to a question? Follow the money. That's true, period. You know, we're watching currently, as we speak, in football. There's a lot of speculation about whether or not we'll have the national championship on Monday night. I hope we do, just to be entertained. But if we don't, there's a backup plan. All right, we'll kick this thing off January the 18th, the following week. Fine, that's great to have plans. When I looked at this NCAA basketball concept, it's not just two teams hoping to play on a Monday night. You have 68 teams. And if there's right. one hiccup, it does affect everybody, and from a timing standpoint. So all I'm going to say about all of this is it's great that the NCAA has given you at least a laundry list of things to discuss. Knock on wood, I'm rooting for it all to work. We all are. Players, coaches, administrators, broadcasters, fans, everybody. But Wes, this is not going to be easy.
No.
In fact, I think it's almost ridiculous to think that you can get 68 teams and think that you won't have a hiccup. Just one. If we had one, I'd sign up for it right now and say, is that all? Awesome. We can deal with it. But this is going to be hard. It's going to be really hard. And it's mandatory that we have this event. Let me emphasize. It's not like, well, if it doesn't work, we'll just shelve it and down the road. No, we've already shelved it. We shelved it last March. And it already had a trickle-down effect on college athletics. You can't lose it back-to-back. So there's nothing easy about this one. I hate to say it.
What are they going to do, okay, when you get the 7 consecutive negatives? And by the way, some of that's pie in the sky. I don't know how you feel about it. But 7 consecutives with any program and no negative, that means that you're going to have to quarantine at the conference tournament level, right? And, you know, that's another issue on this show. But what are you going to do when, oh, I don't know, Gonzaga, Baylor, Villanova, the top seed in the Midwest bracket that's playing in Terre Haute this weekend comes up with a positive? And, oh, by the way, the contact tracing wipes out the team. Look at what Virginia went through the other night where they didn't have certain assistant coaches.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we going to do? What's Dan Gavitt and Mark Emmert's answer going to be to that? Your attendance policy that you're going to give me after February the 1st, that's fine. You can give me your attendance policy that tells me you're going to allow 4 or 5 people for every tier one participant, and basically it works out to about 400 people. That's fine. They deserve to be there. Parents, we saw the Rose Bowl moved in college football because of that factor alone, okay? But this testing thing, you guys, y'all didn't pay attention to football. And you certainly haven't paid attention to the early stages of basketball by the 7 consecutive days. And I'll go back to this again until we get an answer. Who's paying for the 7 test? Because, Pac, some of these leagues and some of these institutions, and how many times have we heard testing differential used to us in conversations? Right?
Yep.
Who's paying for the 7 test? Because the money's not the same in the Power 5 as it is with some of the other leagues. I mean, I can't speak to particulars, but I feel fairly confident in telling you that some of the one-bid leagues are not testing at the rate of some of the other institutions.
That's a given.
And Power 5.
Yeah, that's a given. That's 100% right.
So who's paying for the 7 test? Who's paying to get the Atlantic Sun, the America East, the MAAC, the West Coast Conference? Who's paying to get those teams the 7 test that then allow them to play in the tournament? Who's paying for some of these other institutions? I mean, let's be real here. That's the part. If we're going to do this, somebody's got to step forward and do it.
You got no. Hey, you're preaching to the choir, my man. I just said there's nothing easy about this process. We're watching it unfold in every league right now, how difficult it is just to get through a week without having some game postponed or canceled. So, again, assuming we can come up with 68, I don't think we will have an issue finding 68. But I think we could have an issue getting through that. Now, who knows? I'll just say this. Who knows what the world's going to look like in March and April? We got the vaccine out now. A lot of things could change from that perspective. And I'm being optimistic, very optimistic. So let's just see how this thing plays out. But when I went through that laundry list of items from the NCAA and saw where they were coming from, I just kind of went, hey, you know what? In a perfect world, amen, awesome. But you know what? We're not living in a perfect world. We're living in the exact opposite of that. So let's just see how we pull this thing off. It's like I said earlier, this is going to be a very, very difficult, difficult thing to pull off.
You have used the term tone deaf at times when talking about the National Collegiate Athletic Association, right?
And I'm being kind.
Okay. I would ask you, is 7 consecutive negatives for 68 teams and the support in Tier 1, is that possible?
I like my chances of lasting more than 20 seconds with my man, Mr. Lewis from Virginia Tech in a ring, than I do those 68 teams getting through that without a hiccup. You're going to have a hiccup, all right? I mean, you just...
Right.
It's going to happen. My bigger concern to you was, when you have the hiccup, what's the policy?
What
happens if all of a sudden the Midwest Regional has 4 teams that can't pull off 7 positives? What do you do? Do we forfeit games? Do we just wait for everybody to get out? I mean, how do you do that? I mean, it'd be one thing, like I said, you've got Ohio State and Alabama on Monday night in football. We don't know if we're going to have that game Monday. As of right now, it's a go, but there's a but. But, you know, we could have a hiccup. How are you going to do that with 68?
Tomorrow 68? Is a big day in that game, by the way.
Oh, no doubt.
Tomorrow and today are big days for that game.
No question. So now when you start talking about a 68-team tournament, and you got to pass 7 tests right in a row, you're going to have a – I promise you, there's going to be at least one hiccup, probably multiple, potentially a ton of them. So how do you move forward? That's my only question.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Presley Harvin III, 6 feet, 255.
He can change field position, that's for sure. He has a booming leg.
And this one is another boomer. That is straight up sorcery. 53 yards on the Harvin punt.
One of the top punters in the country, and that's exactly why right there. The winner of the Ray Guy Award is Presley Harvin III from Georgia Tech.
Looking forward to this interview. It's one of the most interesting men in ACC football right here. And he wins the Ray Guy Award. Guy's been booting that thing for last couple years. Told you yesterday, Wes, I said the dude can kick, but I can't wait to ask him about throwing it because he can toss it too.
Well, let's bring him on. Presley Harvin III gets – we're going to go through a lot of topics here with him. First of all, from right there off I-95 in South Carolina, great to have you with us. Congratulations on all this. But maybe above all, in the 125-plus years of Georgia Tech football history, Pack, this is the third unanimous All-America, joining Calvin Johnson and Ken Swilling. So, Presley, congratulations on that as much as anything else.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
All right, before we get to kicking, all right, I want to talk about throwing it, all right, because Durham had to call last year in the Miami game. And you're back there. It looks like going to be nice, slow. We're going to cough and corner one in here. But nah, You're going to show off the arm. All right, so before we talk about the leg, let's talk about the arm. You got this in the repertoire, man. Look how pure this is. I mean, right on the money.
Yeah, man. It was a lot of practice into that play. Nathan Contro, really, really good friend of mine. We drew it up for him earlier in the week, practiced it a good bit. Coach Collins put that play out there, and it definitely was a big play for the game, and you know it was definitely executed well by me and Nate.
Well, now wait a second. How many times did we rep it? Because you threw – I mean, Roddy Jones said it on the air with me. You threw a dime to Nathan Cottrell. You just didn't lunge it down the field. Most guys throw something that looks like, you know, a bad Nerf ball. You threw a dime down the field.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of practice. I threw it to the specialist group on the sidelines just about every day in practice. Every time we got a team rep, tried to execute it well. And I did not realize that when he caught the ball at first. So I didn't start celebrating until I saw the ref put his hands up, and that's when I went crazy.
Man, that's pure right there. All right, let's get to what you really can do, man, and that is kick the football. When did you know you had that skill, that you could really kick?
Yeah, so I started out in middle school. I was definitely just raw, never had any coaching or anything. Then as soon as I got to high school, freshman year, matter of fact, I started getting coaching from Cole's Kicking. My mom took me under her wing. She was really my first kicking coach. And ever since that moment, it was something really, really big sparked in me, and you know, I could definitely take this a long way.
When did you know your mom could kick?
Mom could never kick. You know, a lot of people say, you know, some people, they aren't good at it, but they definitely can coach it better. And she was definitely one of those.
Isn't that something? That's, you know, mom always knows best. You know, mom always knows best, right? How about that? So yeah, she is the secret sauce. That's what you're telling me.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
I love it.
Presley, I remember when you signed with Georgia Tech, Paul Johnson said to me, the spring after you signed, this guy's got a chance. He said, what he's got is something that we don't see very often. And that's not only the power to drive the ball, but that you prided yourself, I guess, in high school, even to a point where you worked on accuracy, like numbers to sideline, hash marks to numbers, that kind of thing. Is that right?
Oh yeah, most definitely.
So how big was that in hearing that from Coach Johnson and others, that you knew you were a valuable piece to maybe what Georgia Tech would want or anybody else who was trying to sign you?
Yeah, it was definitely valuable, especially knowing that the head coach that you're about to be a part of his team, you know, sees what you can offer to the table. It was a big thing for me. And I definitely worked on that a lot in high school. I broke down every single type of punt that you could think of from every type of different yard line, every different situational kick. And I really practiced that majority of the time more than anything else, especially in practice when I was in high school. And when I got here, I had a really, really good coach here. His name was Tim McGrath. I believe he's now at Texas Tech. He definitely helped me along the way on all of those things and, you know, definitely made me into the punter that I am today.
All right. I would assume, and I could be wrong, I would assume there's probably at least some correlation between golf and punting, right? It's like having a wedge, hitting a 60-yard wedge, 40-yard wedge, up and down, high, low. I mean, that's what punters do. It's all about field position. And this may be a goofy question, but are there stadiums, even though it's still 100 yards, the whole routine, are there stadiums that are better kicking stadiums than others?
Definitely are, especially this year. I got to play in a lot of different stadiums I never played in, like Florida State as well as Syracuse. So in Bobby Dodd, the wind likes to swirl a little bit. But definitely when we went to Syracuse up in New York, that was definitely one of the best games I had, mostly probably because it was indoor and didn't have to worry about any wind.
All right, so for non-domes, you said to Tallahassee, you're going to Florida State for the first time. Give me some stadiums that are problematic because of the structure, potential wind, maybe it's the sun. I mean, it could be, listen, it's like golf. To me, it's like a golf course. So give me ones that are problematic, that are different than what you're used to at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, so the two in Florida, especially Miami as well as Florida State's, both of those, you all know that Florida gets really, really hot. Both of those are definitely hot stadiums. But the wind there is really, really good if you have it in your back. But sometimes that wind likes to come forward, too. Bobby Dodd is one of them also. Bobby Dodd is very known for having open sides. I think there's three corners that are actually open and only one that's closed. So what that does is make the wind a little bit swirl. North Carolina State's was very good, too. Even though it was kind of a chilly game, it was definitely a good stadium, too.
So... we had Jose Borregales on with us earlier. We were talking to him about the next step. What's the next step like for Presley Harvin now?
Yeah, so next step is definitely, I already declared for the NFL draft and about to get in the process of going ahead and starting the training regimen. So I'll be doing a lot of kicking. I'll also still be at Tech to finish my degree this semester in business administration. So I have 10 credit hours left, and then I'd have all the afternoons down to devote all the way into kicking and trying to get to the next level.
All right, now I know
all right,
one
I want
thing.
To add,
go ahead, Wes.
Let me add something here. I know there's two things that are they're points of pride. Someone shared a Facebook post from your mom yesterday with me last night that she talked about how proud she was not only of you winning the award, but one point of pride. You're the first African American to win the Ray Guy Award. That means something to you, and I also understand that it means something to punting peers of yours like Marquette King and guys like that. What have you heard from those guys who were black punters that went on to careers in the NFL? I've gotten to know Greg Coleman in Minnesota. I mean, I've got to believe that there are a lot of guys who've reached out to you in the last 24 hours along those lines.
Yeah, so right before I actually got on air, Marquette texted me and told me, congratulations, and it's only the next step from here, and, he'll see me on the next level. Him, as well as a guy named Destroying, played at UCF.
Right.
Very, very famous now in the YouTube scene, but, he's trying to make a comeback into the NFL, too. Actually got to talk to Greg Coleman a little bit through Instagram as well as Rodney. I believe his last
Rodney
name
Williams.
Is... Rodney Williams, yeah. Rodney Williams. He also played here. He was an African-American punter before me. So, all of those guys, definitely guys that paved the way for different routes of, black specialists. And, for me to be the first one to win a Ray Guy, it's definitely an honor. But I also know that I'm not the last one to win it.
Very cool. By the way, I know, just because I've seen enough pictures, you love a great car, don't you? I mean, dude, aren't you? I mean...
Definitely.
All right. With that said, now I don't want to fast forward the clock because you got to live every day and again get your degree, which is incredibly important too. But it's going to work out for you, my man, on the next level. And when you get that first check, I know you're going to take care of family and all that comes first. But if you got a little side change, what are we doing with the automobile?
Yeah. So a good friend of mine, his name is Josh Blancato, one of my gunners here. Really, really best friend of mine, and he has a C5 Corvette. I believe it's a 2001 or 2002. And man, I fell in love with that. I fell in love with that car, man. And he's putting a lot into it. And being able to see him do it off the field, and be with him every step of the way for that. I think I'm definitely going to get one of those too.
Nice.
Now, wait a second. This car and Presley, you know, I worked for a day or two at Georgia Tech back in the day. So The red and black on the car, you kind of got to explain that now for people.
Yeah. So unfortunately, it is red. I know Georgia Tech community definitely doesn't like that color, but that car started out with a little bit of red trim when I first got it back in high school, and just continue to build it along the way. And, you know, I still got a GT sticker on there, so I hope the red doesn't count.
Okay.
If I have that on there.
No, you're good. No, you're good. You're good then.
You mentioned what? That you're 10 hours away, and this is always a traditional question on the show. At Georgia Tech, the hardest class you've had is what?
The hardest class I've had was definitely IT. Here in the business school, they definitely try to get you into different classes like finance, accounting, general management, operations and supply chain, and also IT. So all of us know that tech is not an easy school. Even if you're a business major, it's definitely not an easy route. Unfortunately, IT didn't go my way the first couple of times. I had a little bumps in the road, but this past summer definitely got to be in that class and definitely thankful now.
There you go. Well, listen, congratulations on all your hard work, and thank goodness for mom, right? Because old mom, she knows, man. You know, that's a great story. Really a great story.
Yeah, man. Truly appreciate you guys for having me today.
All right, Presley Harvin III, we wish you all the best. Look forward to watching you at the next level, and you were great to watch in the ACC at Georgia Tech. Stay healthy, my man, and be well. We look forward to having you
back sometime soon.
You bet. Thank you. You bet. Winner of the Ray Guy Award last night, just an outstanding guy. And, boy, what a career, right? Mm-hmm. And to cap it off, second, by the way, Georgia Tech player to win the Ray Guy Award. Durant Brooks won it back in 2007 as a punter as well. So congratulations to Presley Harvin. Congratulations to Georgia Tech.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Last of the loot. It's the last of the loot of guests.
Yeah. You're almost there, by the way. You know what happens at 10:05 this morning, don't you?
Breaking news. There's always breaking news at 10:05. Unless it's Trevor Lawrence, then it's 10:01.
Not a Friday. No. You know what's going to happen at 10:05 today? You're going to be out the door to the Bojangles. You know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I always do Bojangles on a Friday. The dogs, Chester be riding shotgun, and they get biscuits with no butter. I want biscuits with no butter for the dogs. And I'll load up on a couple sausage and egg. That's a Friday deal. That's a Friday tradition.
Maybe next time we hang with Carlos Boozer in person, he'll go hop into Bojangles' truck ride with you. Get you tied up on a sausage, egg, and cheese or bacon, egg, and cheese on a Friday morning.
If I can get Booze off the slopes, he can come ride. Well, he can't ride shotgun because Chester sits shotgun. Carlos have to be in the back with Fuller. But nevertheless, we'll go to Bojangles.
I'm first of all, we're glad to have you on the show. It's good to see you. You look great. Pandemic's gone well. I just want to know if we got any video of a 6'11 snowboarding Alaskan in Colorado.
Have some good time. Listen, just so you know, I love Bojangles. I love Bojangles. I'd definitely take you up on that ride to Bojangles drive-thru.
Come on, Booze. We can do it now. I tell you what, I'm not going to say this is embarrassing, but we've gotten to the point now that every time we go through the drive-thru, the folks at work there even know Chester and Fuller's name. They know the dog's name. It's like it's like Norm on Cheers. You know, it's just like same time every week. They got it. We're kind of waiting for us when we come rolling in there. I got the exact change. It's a piece of cake. So anytime you want to join the mix for Bojangles,
come
with us, man. We're good to go on that.
Absolutely. That's a good deal, man.
You got it. All right, let's talk some hoops. Hey, you know what? The league doesn't have a dominant team. We kind of wait for somebody to become the alpha. But what has been intriguing, Carlos, is the fact that, we already know about Duke and North Carolina and Virginia and Florida State and Louisville, the blue bloods of the DNA, Syracuse. But the league has got a handful of teams that, quite frankly, look pretty good. Virginia Tech, Clemson, NC State. I mean, all of a sudden, there's some quote-unquote, some new blood in the league.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by Clemson, guys. I mean, they're 9-1. They got a guy shooting 80% from the three. I've never even heard of that before. That's got to be some kind of record. Nick Honor, whatever you're doing, Nick, keep doing what you're doing. Obviously, they're very good defensively. Have you ever heard of that? Guys, we've been watching basketball our whole lives.
No.
I've never heard of a guy shooting 80% from the three. That's really impressive. But more than that, they got great team defense. They're holding teams about 57 points a game. Very impressive. They do a good job of sharing the ball with each other. And then they got a guy shooting 80% from the three. That's very impressive.
Are you telling me Langdon never shot 80% from three?
Look, Trajan is I've never heard of this. But 80% from the – listen, our shooter in the studios, Luke Hancock, would be very impressed by this too. It's incredible.
Yeah. But if we put you on the spot, if we put you on the spot right now on January the 8th, knowing you could change your mind 100 times between now and March Madness, who is the best team in the ACC today?
That's not fair.
It's hard to say, man. I mean, it's very hard to say. That's a great, great question. Put me on the hot seat. We got some really good teams. You know, like you said, Clemson, VTech, Duke is in the mix right there. Virginia's right there, Florida State. Louisville is on the cusp of being in the top 25. They got a very good record. I probably would go. It's hard for me not to pick the Blue Devils, but I probably would go with Virginia Tech right now. And I also still like Virginia just because the foundation that they've set there with defensively, they got more shooting this year. I know they're ranked 22nd in the country, but that's going to go up a little bit. I just pick experiences, I guess, where I'm leaning towards. I'm picking experience over newfound success.
Okay. Now, here's the second question we've been having fun with this week asking. If I told you to give me the three best players in the league, because like every year in the ACC, you've been able just to roll off the three best players in the league. You could go, you know, you'd throw out, you know, you give me a Leaky Black. I mean, whatever you're going to say. You can't give me three dominant players right now. There's no alpha.
Nah.
There's no alpha team. There's no alpha player, Carlos.
Nah, there's a lot of good players, a lot of good teams. There's no, like, dominant combination. You got Matthew Hurt at Duke leading the ACC in scoring. You got the Sims kid down in Clemson, who is their Swiss Army knife, Amir Sims, doing everything, rebounding, scoring, just being a great leader for that team. The transfer in at Louisville is doing a great job. He's playing terrific. I mean, we know he could, you know, do it at the other levels, but for him to be doing it at the ACC, leading them in scoring, assists, I think he's second on their team in rebounds. Very impressive.
Right.
I'm sorry, talking about Carly Jones. I'm really, really impressed by the level of talent that we have, but you're right. We don't have a Zion Williamson. We don't have, you know, we don't have a guy that's just taken over the league this year. And maybe that's still yet to be seen, as it's still kind of early. Most teams have played about 10 games. But that's almost halfway through the season this year, too. So,
yeah,
very interesting. You're very interesting to watch the ACC this year.
Carlos, as far as Duke is concerned, you know, they played the other night against BC, and first time they played in 20 days. There's been so many, you know, start, stops, disruptions that it's hard to get into any kind of rhythm when you don't play. And all of a sudden, Wendell Moore comes off the bench, a guy that a lot of folks have had huge upside for, and he's struggled so far this season. But, man, he goes off for 25, making shots, all of a sudden plays with a kind of a renewed enthusiasm and confidence. But I still need to see more from Duke. I still need to see more from Virginia. I still need to see more from North Carolina. We know about the DNA, the banners, and you've been part of all that stuff. But they kind of still feel like mystery teams to me as we sit here in early January.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of them. You know, I think Duke's only played 5-6 games. I know Coach made a decision, the school made a decision to rest and sit them out due to some of the COVID things. But, yeah, a good, great point. With Wendell Moore, you know, he's been struggling this year. I think he was shooting like 21% from the floor, which is abysmal. Comes out off the bench, you know, redeems himself, has a huge 25.9 against Boston College. Again, Matthew Hurt is leading the ACC in scoring, which to me is a huge surprise. That's a big step up for him. He's also doing a great job of rebounding. I think he's averaging about eight rebounds a game, which is also very impressive. You know, the more games you see, the more you're able to dissect the team and see what their strengths and weaknesses are. I also think Carolina is right there, too. They're not far away from being a good team as well. They got a lot of good things going for them. You know, some of the guys, their freshman group is doing a good job of rebounding the ball. They got 3 7-footers in there that can really rebound the ball. They can dominate the glass. They're one of the better rebounding teams in the country, not just the ACC. So they can come up on a rise. And, again, Virginia's experience, guys, I don't know what it is for me. It's hard for me to just overlook them. They got shooting. They got defense. They got great coaching. They got a great foundation. They're a team that I still feel like when it's all said and done will be there in the end competing for the title, maybe the NCAA championship, but definitely for the ACC title.
All right, real quick, I got two questions here. Actually, a question and a statement for you. Is anybody guarding anybody is my question in ACC basketball.
It don't look like it. I don't see too many people doing, you know, the Wojciechowski and slapping the floor and locking people up. I don't see too many people, you know. I don't see a lot of people diving for the loose. And I don't know if it's the fans not being in the arena. I don't know. This is a different environment for college basketball. Not that many fans. Okay. You don't have your student body. But at the same time, it's a lot of offense right now.
All right. Now, I know you talk to guys that play not only collegiately, you talk to coaches, but you also talk to guys that play in the NBA. How difficult is basketball right now to be played at the high level college-wise and in the NBA? Are guys really fighting this mentally as much as I think they are?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys that are in the league right now that are in the pros, and sometimes it's tough. I mean, you go out there, there's no fans. It's a different level of motivation. It almost feels like an organized pickup game for a lot of the guys in the pros. And for them, that's tough because they've been playing just like the rest of us, watching or commentating or broadcasting. We've been watching games, spelled out arenas, you know, from as long as we can remember. So to go from that to this is a dramatic change, not just for the coaches, not just for the fans, for the parents, for us commentating and watching these guys, but especially for the players, because you go out there, you make a great play or a great dunk, or you hit a big time three that gives your team the lead, and there's no roar from the crowd. You know what I mean? They have to generate that through computer stuff, which is cool. Now I've been very impressed with how some of these schools and some of these organizations have been able to create fan noise, but it's just not the same.
Right.
Well, we have,
but
you
at
know,
least, guys, at least we have sports, guys.
That's what I was just, you were, Carlos, no you question. Were reading my mind, because it's like, you know what? I would still rather have what we have right now with really home court being completely eliminated, any advantage, as opposed to sitting on the couch going, all right, which book am I reading tonight? Or, hey, you know, let's go take the dogs for another walk. Or, hey, is it against the law to go to Bojangles 4 times in one day? I mean, I would much rather have what we have right now than the alternative. And so, again, you just embrace what you get and understand there are going to be postponements. There are going to be cancellations. There may be nights that your team just isn't in it. And, yeah, that stinks. But you just, hey, deal with it, and hopefully we get another day.
Yeah, this I think gives us a different level of gratitude, being grateful for having sports, being grateful to be able to still watch these guys play and keep them relatively safe. It gives you a different level of appreciation for the games and sports that we love.
Yeah, amen to that.
The other thing I would add is this. Trajan Langdon, our crack research staff, just sent me this note. Trajan Langdon never shot better than 44% from three in his career, just so we know.
Which is amazing, but it's not 80% is unheard of. I've never heard of a guy that takes a lot of shots. This guy takes like 4 or 5 threes a game. He's shooting 80%.
Hey,
listen, Nick, whatever you're doing, Nick, keep doing it, whatever you're doing.
It's funny. Somebody put a hand in that guy's face. Do something, right? That's funny.
Right.
Oh, hey, stay Carlos, healthy. Be well. Stay safe, my man.
Anytime. See you guys soon, guys. Good to see you.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We have made it to the final segment of another week, show number 295. We are 15 minutes away from going through our favorite Bojangles drive-through. Chester and Fuller are excited about it, and I can't wait to swallow whole. Life is good before this incredible storm hits us with upwards to, I don't know, maybe 5, 10, 15 snowflakes, and we'll see where it goes.
What's your temperature there right now? Do you know?
I couldn't tell you. I have no earthly idea.
Okay. All right. It's 40 degrees here. I think we're going to be fine here. We're not going to get much snow. It's 40.
Oh.
I don't know what the temperature.
What,
37 in Charlotte. We'll get the Bristol temperature in just a moment and compare numbers.
We're changing our state's name to the North Pole, apparently, from based on what the weather folks are saying. So it's just going to be an ugly, blustery
Our Bristol
mess.
Temperature is what now? What temperature do we have? 30. It's 30 in Bristol, 37 in Charlotte, and 40 here in Cartersville, Georgia.
There you go. I suspect the sunshine will be out by noon. That's my prediction.
Eliminate all your snow threat.
Yeah, after they
start replenishing the bread and eggs.
Yeah, they've scared everybody in Charlotte to get enough material for French toast for 3 months. I suspect the sunshine will be out by noon, 2 o'clock. Okay. By the time we start doing the radio show this afternoon, it'll be probably a blustery 65 degrees, be my guess.
All right. Well, I tell you what then. In the meantime, since it looks like the streets are going to be cleared in time, let's hit the Bojangles weekend menu, kids, shall we? Why not? Absolutely, because you know at 10:05, bacon, egg, and cheese for Pack, 2 buttered biscuits for the dogs.
Unbuttered, no butter.
Right?
No butter for the dogs.
No butter?
Oh, yeah, no butter.
Oh, come on. We got to butter those biscuits up for the dogs.
No.
I mean, they eat asparagus. Why not that? All right, here we go.
It's because they're eating steak.
Basketball tomorrow.
It's because they're eating steak with the asparagus.
All of it here on the network. Wake Forest at number 21, Duke at noon. 22nd-ranked Virginia at Boston College at 2 o'clock. And then a triple header on the ladies' side Sunday. Clemson at number 2, Louisville. Virginia Tech at Georgia Tech. Boston College at Wake Forest. And then a men's game at 6 o'clock follows a busy Sunday of basketball right here on ACC Network. That's a look at the Bojangles weekend menu. You got no butter on the biscuit for the dogs?
The dogs, no. The drive-through at Bojangles, we get biscuits, but with no butter for the dogs. Me, on the other hand, is a different story. That's a whole different story.
Thanks to Makai Lewis for being a part of this show. Jose Borregales on the way to training in Orlando pulled off on the side of the road in the Florida Turnpike with 18-wheelers buzzing by. Great to have Muffet McGraw and Carlos Boozer here, and also Presley Harvin III, the winner of the Ray Guy Award. Look forward to having him back in the future as well.
Yep, so, no question.
On this date, 1955, future ACC member Georgia Tech, coached by the legendary John Whack Hyder, ended Kentucky's 129-game home winning streak at Memorial Coliseum. Meanwhile, on this date in 2021, Kentucky is 0-2 at home against the ACC and 0-4 overall.
Been a tough year for the Wildcats. I mean, other than beating,
oh my God,
other than beating NC State in a bowl game, they've not had a whole lot of success against the conference.
Oh, goodness.
But that's a whole separate issue.
My goodness. Oh, my heavens.
Do you ever go to Memorial Coliseum, by the way? Do you ever walk in that joint?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty unbelievable. Pretty unbelievable spot. I like the old buildings, by the way. The one I've never been to that I've always wanted to go to is the Palestra in Philadelphia. I've never been inside the Palestra.
Oh, West Durham. That is a classic.
It's a miss. It's a miss. I need to go to the Palestra.
Yeah.
And it's on my list with Army and Navy. I want to go to the Army-Navy game, and I want to go to the Palestra.
Yeah. Yep.
But, yeah, I highly recommend the old buildings, by the way.
Yeah, 100% right.
Highly recommend them.
Palestra's awesome.
Yep.
So is Army-Navy.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.